You're listening to JS Party, a weekly celebration of JavaScript and the web. Hello 2024, we are back. New year, same old web dev podcasting goodness with your internet friends.
When I'm with friends, I like to have fun.
Huge shout out to our partners at Fly.io, the home of changelog.com. Launch your app near your users. Fly transforms containers into micro VMs that run on their hardware in 30 plus regions on 6 continents. Learn more at fly.io. Okay, hey, it's New Year's party time, y'all.
3, 2, 1.
Happy New Year!
Spectacular welcome to 2024 from your friends at JS Party. I'm Jared, and I am here with Amel. Happy New Year, Amel.
Happy New Year. We're having a little too much fun already. Let's just put it this way. This show was supposed to start 30 minutes ago, our recording time anyway. So we've just been shitting about. So Happy New Year.
We are going to have some fun today. K-Ball is also here. What's up, K-Ball?
I'm celebrating, and I just learned I have a built-in kazoo.
It's maybe even better than Bone Skulls, who had a kazoo that he brought with him, because that's Chris. Hey, Chris.
Hey.
Thanks for bringing that kazoo.
You're welcome.
Happy New Year, man.
Yeah, it's really exciting to be in 2024 right now.
Uh-huh. So exciting.
The excitement is palpable. Nick is here as well. What's up, Nick?
Ahoy, ahoy. New year, new me. I wear sunglasses now.
He wears his sunglasses at night so he can throw TypeScript shade. Bow, 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 bow.
Shame us for not using NeoVim.
Okay. Yeah, right.
Well, you have arrived at our 5th annual JS Party New Year's celebration. This is a fun way that we like to kick off what is this new year without us knowing what is this new year. We're going to guess. We are going to reflect a little. We are going to review past predictions. We are going to perhaps cast forward some predictions and maybe talk a few of us into being so foolish to make resolutions right here for everyone to hold us to account. So that is the plan. Where should we start? Should we start at a quick look back at last year's predictions and see how they held up?
Let's do it.
I was just looking back. I definitely missed it, but maybe I should re-up it.
Yes, K-Ball's big prediction. In fact, this one was so bold that it turned into a bet, I think, amongst participants. Twitter is going to go into bankruptcy in 2023.
Wait, had Elon taken over at that point? I can't remember.
He had. He took over in, I think, November of 22. And so we were right during the big hubbub, and multiple organizations were suing Twitter, and he had laid off 2/3 of the staff or whatever that number is. And K-Ball thought this couldn't possibly continue forward. And yet here we are, a year later, and not bankrupt.
Well, but Twitter is dead.
Not his prediction. His prediction was Twitter will go bankrupt. Actually, Twitter will file for bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Very, very, he should have been more vague. He should have been much more
Twitter
vague.
Twitter will be dead. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a reminder of a variation on an old thing. There's this saying that says the market can stay irrational far longer than you can stay solvent. In this case, it's Twitter is staying solvent far longer than seems rational.
There you go. Well, I guess, you know, Faraz would be here to be on the winning side of the bet, but he's not here. So I guess he still is a loser. Sorry, Faraz. Would you like to re-up it? Would you like to double down? Maybe go, you know, all in twice and say by 2025, by the end of 2024. Or do you think at this point wrong?
What was our wager? Did we have a wager?
It was like internet points or something.
Okay.
Something
well, worthless. I'll go double or nothing on my internet points for sure.
Okay. All right. So we'll see you here next year for K-Ball to eat crow another time. I think it's going to just continue along. You know, things tend to go slower and steadier. You know, maybe Elon will land this plane in a controlled fashion. Who knows? Call back to the pre-show. Amel, what do you think? Do you think Twitter's going anywhere? X? FKA Twitter.
Honestly, so I have very close friends of mine who judge me on the daily whenever I send them links from Twitter. And like, I can basically hear their eye roll, you know, I'll like text them a link
right.
and then I could hear the eye roll on the other side. Like, oh, are you still on there? Like, when are you going to get off? You know?
Right.
And here's the thing. I was off. I was off for like almost 2 years. I just came back a few months ago and I think I've been having fun. It's definitely a lot different. It feels like an echo of itself. Like, it's not the same platform from 2018 where I think for me tech Twitter kind of peaked, but you know, it's still the fastest way to get news and reach out to people and share information. I mean, like, real talk, like I just needed help from someone the other day on something. This person is like a really big deal on the internet, and I was like, this person is uniquely suited to help me with my problem, and I literally reached out to them. And in 2 minutes, they responded back to me. In 30 minutes, we were having a conversation on our cell phones. Like, I mean, it was that quick, right? And so I feel like we're still, I don't know what's going to beat that, like when it comes to kind of news connection information.
Yeah, there's still value there.
You know, but do I feel like I need to take a shower after using Twitter for, you know, sometimes? Yes, you know, but am I going to stop using it right away? I think I'm going to maybe go down with the platform. That might happen for me. But we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. I always thought Twitter was a cesspool from the beginning. So for me, you know, does it feel different? I thought for like a while it did. It's like it was too much about the main character being Elon Musk every single day. And I feel like that started to fade slightly perhaps. And it was too much Twitter was talking about Twitter for a long time. And so that was annoying. But I feel like as that kind of settled out and it seems like, okay, it's going to kind of continue on. It's still the place, I think, where the big stories are broken and talked about first. For example, the whole OpenAI Sam Altman debacle, that like 5-day drama, it pretty much unfolded on Twitter. Now, was it valuable for all of us to be part of that? I don't think so. Like, did we gain anything there? No, but that's really where the story unfolded. So it still is a bit of a gravitational pull for stuff like that. But it was always, for me, trashy. And so now it just feels like more trashy, but I was already ready for it. So I find value where I can find value. And I roll my eyes maybe more than I used to.
I was wearing high heels over the trash. Like, I felt like that bougie woman that was like wearing a fur coat and some high heels and like stepping over trash. Like, ew, you know, get out of my way. Like, that's how I treat Twitter. Like, I definitely am selective with who and what I engage with and who I follow. And you have to really curate heavily. Otherwise, you will go nuts. There's a lot of triggering stuff there. It's meant to be triggering. It was the whole point of the platform is to invoke.
Yeah, exactly.
Rage, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you were saying, Nick.
I said you definitely grok it as a callback to the. Grok AI. Yeah.
Oh, good one.
God.
You know it's a good callback when you have to explain it.
For the record, for everyone listening, Nick is still wearing his sunglasses.
I don't think he has any plans of taking them off.
Well, and he was rocking out that like
they look like EDM DJ Ultra Music Festival sunglasses.
The
like,
best part is I can see myself in his glasses now. And so I'm kind of staring deep.
I can see the whole
I'm staring
monitor.
Deep into his eyes.
Reflection. Yeah.
I'm very aware of what's on my screen now.
Yeah. We can tell when you're not paying attention.
Well, Nick's jokes may crash and burn, but his prediction from last year wasn't as bad as K-Ball's. Nick predicted that we have Bun, we have Dino, we have Node. His prediction would be that that Dino and Bun end up making Node better rather than one of them supplanting Node. What do you guys think of that prediction and how that's played out this last year?
I have so many thoughts on this. Yeah. Like, I just want to say, Nick, that was a really good prediction. Like, congratulations.
Thank you.
And that is definitely happening. I actually linked to some discussions on Twitter, the forbidden platform. We'll put some links in the show notes to some conversations I was kind of a sidecar on where this exact thing happened, where, you know, Jared like was like, oh, looks like
Jared Sumner.
Yeah, Jared Sumner, to be clear, not Jared.
Just to for clarity's purposes. Yeah.
Yeah, well. Jared found this like area of Node that was slow. And then the maintainers were like, oh, it wasn't actually, I take that back. It wasn't that he found it. It's that somebody, when they were doing benchmarking, found this new area. And then, you know, the maintainers looked into it and it was like, oh, it has to do with some old dependency that hadn't been updated and yada, yada, yada. And like, it's just fascinating how these discussions are happening in the community now and Node is getting better as a result. And very, very happy about that. So,
Chris, your take on this sentiment, do you think it's true? Are you happy about it? I think of you as a Node guy. I'm not sure if that's the right way to think of you, but I very much associate you with Node.js. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think the same thing is going to happen when, you know, after Yarn came out, it pushed NPM to add some features and stuff that it didn't have, and it made NPM better, and I think the same thing is going to happen with Node.
I agree with all of that.
Of course you do. It's your prediction.
And this is why it's good. It's healthy. It's so healthy. This is what you want. Otherwise, you have stagnation, you know? I think competition is really healthy. So it's important for us to kind of have that.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of new cool things coming to Node proper that have been in Bun or Dino before. One that I can think of off the top of my head is specific permissions. Like you can disable networking or disable file system access probably. And, you know, that's something that Dino, like that was there from the outset. Like you can only run this in a secure way and get access to the things that you need access to and nothing else. I think that's really cool. And there's a huge push towards like more secure Node modules too. Or maybe that's just the Feroz propaganda in the back of my head.
Very true. I agree with all of that. I think it's kind of cliche at this point, but you know, competition breeds innovation and lack of competition just creates stagnation. And it's awesome to see new entrants come in and projects get a new reason to do awesome things and new ideas, you know, like, oh, we didn't think about doing it that way, or we have these constraints, you don't. Maybe we could change one of those and modify the way we work to get 80% of that versus the 100% that you have. But it's all good to see. Whether or not Dino and or Bun will actually gain a significant foothold on like user base, I don't really have much prediction there. I think probably Bun has a better shot because Dino's more different, but gosh, who knows? Time will tell. And Node has such a huge user base right now that it would be like, you know, an upstart browser trying to take browser share from Chrome, which could happen. But
the Bing versus Google search analogy, I think, is applicable. It's like in terms of scale, most projects in the wild use Node, period, like for lots of different things. Yeah.
On some of the shows this year, when we talked about these different things, one of the things we talked about is that you don't have to have Node versus Bun in your decision making. You can use Bun in particular parts of your deployment where performance is particularly important, and other deployments that are more focused on backwards compatibility or need certain features that it doesn't implement, just don't use it. Like it can become a tool in the tool chest without having to supplant Node.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do have to say, though, for me, like as a tech lead or former tech lead at this point, like I would say the fear I have when I hear about that is it just kind of like I think really hard about introducing new things into my stack and what's the benefit that you get versus the cons, you know, and for me, the cons usually outweigh. And so if I can get like 80 with the existing tools that we have, then, you know, it's worth the compromise because there's lots of other better ways to spend that engineering time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not to cross promote here. I don't want to cross promote things that Jared does that aren't TypeScript related. But that episode of Changelog and Friends with Searles about, I think it was it dependencies, it's got me constantly thinking about, do I really need to add this new dependency?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I love that.
That's good.
Yeah, it was a great show.
I have to listen to that.
I love that we have you thinking that way. I think it's a healthy way of thinking. Doesn't mean you don't end up adding it. It just means that you stop to consider it and you weigh the pros and cons and you think, this has a total cost that I need to consider before I add it. And maybe you end up doing it anyways, but at least you're taking intentional steps with your code base.
Yeah. And I think for me, just again, to give some more context to where my kind of extreme trepidation or what seems like a very conservative answer, like I'll give you some context, is like, it's not just me and my team and my engineers that have that cost. It's like our ops team, our security team. There's like a huge ripple of people and different parts of the company that are impacted when you introduce large new technology into the stack. So I just want to put that out there. Like it's not just devs, like it's SRE, it's ops, it's security, it's like infra teams, it's platform teams, it's all kinds of stuff. So just think about it that way.
Yeah, I would also strongly consider the licensing and ownership of the project.
Oh yeah,
because stuff like Bun and Dino, they could pull those permissive licenses if they want, right?
Yes,
and there might be an incentive or pressure to do so, which if you're a small company, maybe you're not going to be able to afford it or something, right? And so you really got to be careful about the, like, where does your open source come from when you're picking open source?
Yeah, well said. We've definitely seen prior art now of that not just being the hypothetical situation that may happen to you. It's actually happened on more than one occasion of a relicensing of a major lead dependent upon open source software, until where suddenly everybody needs to sit down and decide how are they going to forge a path forward given these licensing changes. So it's no small thing, even if it's a small package that you rely upon. Well, let's now turn the focus to me. I had a prediction last year. I don't know. You guys be the judge. I feel like it's kind of happened, but not 100%. I predicted, and remember, this was the end of 22. We just had the Twitter takeover. We just had ChatGPT end of November. The AI revolution had begun. The buzz was like peaking. Maybe not peaking. It's gone higher since then. But what I said was that I felt we would see AI plateau in the second half of the year. I thought it would continue to improve, but not at the same pace that it had improved up until then. I specifically said we'll still be writing our own code this year. What do you think? How did I fare?
Well, according to the advertisement that I see constantly on GitHub, they're now writing 55% of my code.
I thought it was 40-something last time I checked.
I've seen that one, too. They're really shoving
Maybe
that.
Maybe they're A-B testing that number.
Well, no, I heard that 40% of code on GitHub now is generated by AI, but I don't know if that's actually true. That sounds ridiculous if that's the case.
Oh, you're right. It says make me 55% faster.
That's cool.
I think there's probably a research study that went behind that number, but I think other numbers are most likely misinformation flying around at a pace, because it's very popular right now to tell people how good you are at coding now that Copilot's writing your code. But I don't know. Most of the demos to me don't look like they could stand up for more than the 30 seconds they were recorded on.
70% of the time it makes me faster, 100% of the time.
I was going to say, I definitely experimented with some of that and took it out of my config because I did not find it overall sped me up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I same here. I think for me, it's only useful for boilerplate code. Other than that, I'm always refactoring around it. But it's really great for learning a new language or a new tool. Which is how I've been using it, because I'm learning C++. Well, I learned it a long, long time ago and just blocked everything I knew out of my brain. So I'm relearning that. So that's been helpful.
I will put an asterisk on that. It is really good for learning an old tool that is new to you. If you try to use it to learn an actually newly developed tool, it will mislead you all over the place.
Yes. Lack of data.
Yeah, lack of data. Right. But no, I think for me, it's it's been a good learning aid. But when using it in a context where I'm an expert, it's only useful for boilerplate code or helping me come up with regexes, which is how I've also been using it quite a bit.
Now, are y'all talking about specifically Copilot, or are you also lumping in talking to ChatGPT or Bard or
both?
Both.
I find ChatGPT to be more useful as a quote unquote person that I go ask questions to versus mm-hmm. anything that generates code inline inside my editor. You know, when I start to type, even I've never been a huge fan of IntelliSense, which I know makes me a very small minority of developers. It's great if you're trying to know what functions are available in this scope. I like it for that. But anytime I'm halfway typing something and stop, it's not usually because I'm trying to figure out. It's just because I'm pausing my brain. And then what I found specifically with Copilot, but I've also tried Kodi and I did Tab 9. This is probably 2 years ago, so I'm not sure the current state of Tab 9. If I do it that way, it just puts out you should autocomplete this. And it's almost never what I want. At least even if it is, I'm stopping and I'll think about code that I wasn't caring about before. And now I'm thinking about something else. And so it takes me out of my flow. And maybe that just takes time to get used to. But I like to go somewhere instead of going to Google. Almost 9 times out of 10, I will go to ChatGPT and say, write this regex for me, write this SQL. And for that class of problem where I already know how to solve it, I just don't want to. I find it to be a big productivity boost, but I'd rather go to it than have it integrated. You guys?
That's 100% where I find the benefit of Copilot. Like you said, it will generate crap. And then I feel like it pulls me out because I already know what I want to write and it's trying to help me by auto completing that. But then right. more times than not, it just, I have to pause my train of thought, read over what it put, and then
yes.
either decide yes or no. And if it's not right, then I have to get back to my train of thought, which is not always, you know, fail safe or foolproof.
Right. Fail safe.
Yeah. But the only place where that actually, like, I'm totally like, yes, just generate and I will accept yours and then try and tweak that from there is unit testing. It's actually pretty darn good at generating unit tests.
Absolutely. Agreed on that.
Makes sense. If you're into writing tests. Chris, what do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think I've had good success with Copilot, and I haven't tried to use ChatGPT directly for coding, but like, it's cool. I don't know what they do now, but it has some sort of understanding of the project you're working in. And so I would be like, I'd select this class and be like, okay, refactor this class in this particular way. That would be tedious to do manually, and it does it. And like, it uses my types and everything. It like, it tries to keep the same style. And with unit tests and testing in particular, like, it knows like I'm using a non-popular, just kind of an obscure assertion library, right? But it knows all the assertions I've written before, and it's able to figure out what to use. And so it's not like I'm asking it to write unit tests and it's going and using like try syntax or just syntax or something, because it doesn't knows what I'm using in it, and it does it correctly, you know, 4 out of 5 times.
Well, and I think this is kind of the natural process of maturation of a new set of capabilities was developed and we're trying to learn the best ways to use them. And I think, for example, writing unit tests, doing other things, like, that is a productivity boost. I do think there's a lot of hype cycles around the productivity boost that you get from writing new code that I think are baloney. I don't think it's actually, I mean, to Amel's point, it's really useful when writing boilerplate. And if you're writing a set of boilerplate scripts, or you're trying to like do little things to push data from one service to another, like, I think it is a dramatic performance boost there. I have definitely seen, particularly like a junior using code completion and then getting things where it has to go through many cycles of review and feedback because it's not matching styles or other things from the rest of the project. And I think it's a performance cost. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think we need to figure out where it's useful and where it's not. But like, there's some of that is getting past the hype cycle and saying, okay, like, it's a useful tool in these scenarios and it is not a useful tool in these other scenarios, and we should stop trying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. Okay, well, and thank you so much for bringing up the juniors thing, because I have thoughts on this, Jared, which I really want to share on air. So I'm really, really concerned about the arc of our junior engineers, actually, because like, I think remote work has been terrible for them, because like, I've managed and led junior engineers in this remote environment, and trust me, it's not the same as being in an office with them where they can just walk over to you and they get that ambient learning from their team. So I think remote work isn't the greatest. It does provide access to work, but it's not the greatest when you are very, you know, in the first 1 to 3 years of your career. The other thing is AI. Right. All the, for me, like, you know, I look at tools like V0 from Vercel and all these other, you know, kind of code generation AI tools that are specific to kind of developing UI components, etc. This is fine. I mean, this is the work that, listen, as somebody who's been in this industry for, I don't know, 10 plus years, like, I don't want to, this is not work that I want to do, right? This is actually work that I have not been doing for years. Like, I can't remember the last time a company paid me money to make a component. You know what I mean? Like, I'm managing infra and architecture and all these other things. And who's writing components? Our junior engineers. Like, they're learning the ropes. They're doing the grit work so that they can kind of get their reps in, you know, the repetition, so that they understand how these systems are connected together. They're the little building blocks, right? And so I'm just really worried about, like, what does this future look like for them? How are we going to have, like, are we going to even have junior engineers? Like, because AI is doing the work of what I would consider junior people. And I think starting at a higher level, just, I don't know. I don't know if, is that really doing them justice? Like, I don't know. Maybe this is an irrational fear. I have no idea. But I'm just saying I'm worried.
Amel, you have nothing to worry about, because the AI companies have this all figured out. If you ask them, there won't be any engineers in 5 years. So,
oh god,
problem solved.
Oh, I'm just saying it's a concern, you guys, and this is an us problem. It affects our industry. We should be, like, figuring this out and making sure we have a path for people at all levels, you know, senior to junior, like, and just want to make sure that people can progress those paths in a way that is conducive and healthy and sustainable. And I'm not saying that even being a junior engineer, some people get through junior in 6 months, you know, and they're done and they've moved on to mid. Some people are there for a few years, you know, and not everyone's, you know, so it's not even something that's like a universal standard or timeline or whatever. But I'm just saying, like, I just want to make sure that we have a path for people, like, to learn effectively so that they can manage these complex systems, you know, and when things go sideways on the AI written code, like, they know how to debug at 3 a.m. if they need to, right? Because that's what happens, you know, incidents happen.
Well, I think I'm with you. I think that thinking back to when I was a junior, I didn't know how to debug at 3 a.m. either until I had to debug at 3 a.m. and then I had to figure it out, you know? And so I think that still all those same processes apply, just perhaps maybe in scarier ways. I don't know. Maybe it was pretty scary back then for me as well.
I think it's more that you're debugging at 3 a.m. as a senior or mid-level person or above. It's just that, like...
No. I mean, when I was a junior, I said, back when I was a junior, like, how I learned to do it was by doing it. There's certain things that you learn to do by doing. And you can't actually impart that to somebody until they go through the fire, hopefully with somebody alongside them who's been there before, because it's a lot better that way. But I don't know. The kids are all right.
I hope so. I'm so worried about this younger generation. I feel so privileged and blessed to be in my mid to late 30s. Inside joke there.
It is concerning. Yeah, I do... like, have concerns because I use these tools every day. I go to ChatGPT before I go to Google now, like, almost 100% of the time.
Same.
But I also
we should make that a t-shirt.
I also have, like, almost every single time I have, like, I'm asking it, you know, to help me write this thing. And then I have to, like, I either copy and paste the error that I got, or I'm like, that method doesn't exist. And what does it always do? You're correct. That doesn't exist. Let me correct that and go for it. And, like, having to just constantly do that as a junior, where, like, you either have to, like you have to do something and it's constantly giving you this BS all the time. Like, it just feels, I don't know, it would feel overwhelming.
Yeah, but think of the alternative. Go back to, Nick, when you were writing C for the first time in, like, intro to computer science class or whatever language you're writing, Java. And you would type out the thing and you'd say, okay, GCC, whatever, compile this. And it would be like compilation error. And it would just stare at you. And you'd be like, okay. It wouldn't give you anything besides maybe chunking out a whole bunch of, like, binary looking crap. And you'd be like, think what the kids can do right now. They take the output, they put it to ChatGPT, they say, this didn't work. And it says, you are correct. I should try this. And then they try that. And so, like, we were... just out there. I mean, I'll speak for myself because I'm older than you, Nick. I was on an island when I was learning. Like, I didn't have any help at all, pretty much. I had a book that didn't change the words when things changed. And I had a compiler that didn't really say much when it wouldn't compile. And we all survived. So I don't know. The kids are all right, guys. They'll be all right.
So I think there is a key thing here. You know, Amel, you brought this up and you said, I don't know if this is just me. It's definitely not just you. I think this is a real concern. It's a concern that happens anytime technology changes.
We're not talking about it, though, K-Ball. I think that's the...
Well, I mean, you say we're not talking about it. It was the subject of one of the big talks at a conference I went to. Like, this is
okay,
having...
That's good.
There is some amount of this in the discourse. It was a management-focused conference, so, like, it may not be... I don't know. But, yeah, there was definitely a question. Now, the speaker in that case was sort of pushing his book, not his physical book, but, like, his stance, because he runs a training company and he was saying, oh, if you're not going to learn these things through the course of doing anymore because of AI, we need to do more formal training. That is one angle to this. Like, if you think about calculators, we force kids to practice doing calculations without calculators because it helps them start to learn the underlying pieces, even though at some point they pretty much start using calculators for everything. There may be an analog to what we need to do in software. Maybe it's more formal training, maybe it's something else, but there may be something where we say, if you are learning, you don't use these tools, even though they would help you, because you need to learn the underlying fundamentals before you start applying these tools. And we separate out the doing for learning from the doing for doing, which is not something that happens right now a lot in entry-level positions. There's a lot of you're doing this thing and you're expected to learn on the job and kind of go. Like, maybe we need to formalize the separation a little bit more of like, here's a set of things you do to learn principles and here's a set of things you do to get the job done.
In college, all I learned was principles and I didn't know anything. Like, I didn't learn anything about doing the job. And that's like, you read articles where employers say that's like a huge problem about like college grads, where it's just theory and first principles, and they don't know how to ship software, right?
Yeah, but I think the applied part of engineering is, you know, you got to go to a tech school for that.
I feel like but I mean, if you go through college and you haven't used AI, like I'm sure you do now, but like if you don't know how to do it and they're going to expect you to know how to write a prompt, I mean,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I'm sorry. And just for, I'm very biased towards tech schools because I went to one. I didn't graduate. That's like its own show. Fun backstory there. But I did go to a tech school, and I feel like they're the only ones that I saw doing a ton of like hands-on learning projects. And like, you know, like they make sure you can do the thing that you learned. Which, you know, I'd love to see more universities do.
Well, the problem with college isn't merely that you don't get applied education, is that you end up with a giant heaping debt that you never pay off your entire life, and it's the only thing you cannot file bankruptcy against. That's the problem with college, but we're on a whole other podcast talking about that.
I do wonder, coming back to the generative AI thing, if part of the challenge right now, and I'm a little bit, this is coming in from the chat, but the challenge right now is sort of this assumption pushed by people who have a lot of investment in AI that AI can actually replace people coding. And they're pushing, you know, you have all these studies. Oh, it's improving your productivity. It's doing all this. And so everybody thinks, oh, I've got to do this or I'm falling behind. And like, as we were highlighting, for some problems, it's a big help. And other problems, it's crap. And it's not helping you get more done. And at the same time, it's inhibiting your ability to learn. And so, like, I think, you know, some of this is pushed by people like the Sam Altmans of the world, who they have an agenda. And it's very clear that they have an agenda, but they're not, you know, they're kind of taking this. It's like the NFT boom. This is going to replace all these things. This is going to be doing these things. Well, there's more value in AI than I think there was in crypto, but there's also a whole lot of junk.
And the question is that none of us know the answer to is like, where will the pace of progress take us over N years? And which goes back to my prediction. I predicted we'd have another plateau. I haven't seen a step change like we saw with Transformers since then. And now we're just kind of like at this new plane where we can do generative AI. Now we have these tools, and now we're going to integrate them. We're going to test them. We're going to figure them out. We're going to have like these minor improvements to our work and life that don't replace humans at all. The question is, will the next step get us to a place there or not? Or is there going to be another one? And when will those step changes happen? This last one took about 5 years. Is there going to be another one at the pace of, that was what the buzz was about back in the spring, was like, look how fast we're moving now. It's going to just hit the stratosphere from here. We have seen that not take place. We are learning how these have improved our lives, but now we're seeing where they stop. And the question is, Nick's joke, in 5 years, there won't be any engineers. Like, that could be true. I don't think it is. I don't think the history has played out that way. Past results do not predict future performance. But maybe these people are right that you won't need humans in the loop in 5 to 10 years, and the AI will do it all. I think all five of us are probably on the betting against that. But we've been wrong before, haven't we, K-Ball?
I think that there's less of a concern of it fully replacing us, but I do think that there is some truth to the idea that humans who use the AI well will outpace the humans that don't. And
sure,
that might lead to, I've heard the argument both ways, right? Like, there, that might lead to less overall jobs because you can really have a quote unquote 10x developer who's, you know, 1x plus 9x AI. Or is it going to be like another argument I saw was like the push from assembly languages to like higher level languages didn't make it so that there were fewer programmers because it was easier to program. It made it so there were way more programmers.
Yeah, because there's more opportunity,
right,
and cheaper, more people can play the game. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a huge swath of businesses whose economics don't make sense at the current cost of software development that might make sense.
Exactly.
If you 10x the, or, you know, reduce the cost of software development by 10x or 5x or, you know, something in those domains, right? Like,
yes,
there's a huge swath of businesses that exist today that whose economics don't make sense based on software development and only are alive because capital was so cheap. And we're learning that. But maybe those businesses do make sense in a world where AI makes software developers 10 times more productive.
Mm-hmm. I just wish those businesses would die. I'm sorry to say that. And it sounds so harsh, but really, it's really bad for all of us. Because what it does is it creates this churn, y'all. Like, all these incredible, smart, kind human beings go work at these companies with a hope and a dream. And then they get laid off, and it just creates churn. And all I want for Christmas, New Year's, whatever, is stability, tech. Stop creating churn in our community. Stop it. It sucks.
It's a natural process, though, of all creation is churn and life and death, and things survive and things don't. And that's the way it plays out. You can't just know what's going to work. You have to try things.
Too much churn. We can do better. We can do better, you know? And I would rather we be growing at a more, like a slower rate and have it be more sustainable and less churn, like less churn heavy than what we have today, you know? So
the last year and a half have been brutal in this industry. They've been absolutely brutal. And I think a lot of that has been a hangover of a couple of years that were manic. It's almost like the industry itself is doing a manic depressive thing. Coming back to predictions, I would actually predict that towards the second half of next year, we get back to something that feels a little bit more stable in the tech industry. I think we still have some overhang to work through. I think there's going to be more startups going bust, but I think both because we've worked through a fair amount of it and because I expect financial conditions to ease up, the second half of this year, I think, is going to look more stable in the tech industry.
Yeah, yeah, I think so too. I think overall 2024, I'm hearing, is looking up, you know, even just from recruiters and people that, you know, are waiting on hiring.
Define stability. I want Cable to define that so I can hold his feet to the fire later. This is way too vague. I feel like you're going to be right, even if it's not specific. Like, what do you mean more stable?
You know, I've learned my lesson from Twitter. I don't want to draw these lines too carefully.
Well played. Well played.
It's a good question. So I think in some ways,
less layoffs.
Maybe it's less layoffs, which we've had reduced layoffs over the course of the year. Mm-hmm. We will probably see, I think we saw a few coming through in December again, and we may see a spike up at the beginning of the year again, just because everybody's doing their annual, like, oh my God, what are we trying to do next year? So I think there's that. I think, you know, a part of it is big tech will be expanding and hiring again.
Which we've seen of the big tech, I think Facebook/Meta is the only one so far that has shown that they are. Which may be just be the first of all, but, or maybe, I don't know.
Oh yeah, no, I'm being poached for roles at Meta and Microsoft and Google right now. So like,
poached? I thought you were fun employed.
Oh, I guess I'm fun employed, but I mean, they're poaching me from my first choice.
You're being recruited?
They're approaching you from your life of leisure.
Yes. Yes.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, I'm being recruited, yeah.
What about us plebs? Can us plebs get a job offer, ML?
Yeah, I guess, sure. And technically another letter in the fang, but I'm not going to say which one. So no offense to anyone who works at any of these companies, I'm not trying to work at any of these companies. I'm trying to work somewhere else. But I'm just saying that the recruiters are back.
Recruiters are people too, you know, that's what I always had to remind myself. Cool. Chris, any predictions for this year, 2024? You'd like to put your name on any future goings on?
Well, we already had the Twitter's going to go bankrupt.
Put your money behind that one.
Yeah. Can we do like a death pool or no?
Yes. That's where I'm at.
It's gonna get pretty morbid around here.
Yeah. Okay. Let's not do that.
Who would you like to see die this year? No.
Well, I mean, I don't have a preference, but
okay. But who do you think might die?
Well, Jimmy Carter doesn't have long.
That's good true. Lord. I mean, then again, he's been in hospice for like the last 5 years, right?
That's true. I thought he was gone already. He hasn't died.
He's hanging on.
Wow. That's amazing. That's a sound choice.
So there that must be it. That's my prediction.
I hope Jimmy Carter is alive. I hope he stays alive. He's one of my favorite living presidents.
I hope he survives. Yes. Just so that we can call Chris wrong last year. But that's an epic call. All right. Nick, can you top that? 2024 prediction. Better than what Chris just did, because that was amazing.
Oh, I don't know. I liked the idea of a Deadpool. Not that I want anyone or any
like a sequel.
Not that I want anything to die, but I just feel like there's going to be churn enough that the Kings are going to at least be challenged more than they have been in the past. And the things that are
which is good.
Things that are making me think that.
Get specific.
I don't know if I want to call it out specifically, but I feel like the close-knit combat. I don't know my words today. My CO2 is off the charts because I'm podcasting.
The quantified self.
Yeah. I think that the marriage between, the really close marriage between React and Next is going to turn out to be a mistake that hurts React more. Lets us.
You think it's going to be a divorce?
No. Not, they're not going to get divorced, but something like something else is going to supplant it, or at least supplant it in the mindset, right? Because nothing is supplanting jQuery yet.
Okay. But mindshare.
I'm worried I'm predicting potentially that Next, everybody's going to start seeing through the Next facade to the Vercel advertisement that it is.
Okay, I think that's already happened to a certain extent. You think it's going to go viral?
It's going to really affect React's market share.
People are actually going to move away versus just talking about it.
Yes.
Okay.
To Astro.
How do we measure that? Oh, yeah. To Astro. You have a specific
Astro is awesome, okay?
I think that's how we put a nice hard prediction on it. Astro overtakes Next.
And we can just use the state of JS survey results.
Not every site's a static site, though. I mean, I think Astro's great for...
They're moving the other way.
How so?
Isn't Astro becoming less of a static site generator?
Yeah. I guess you're right with like the newer... Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I mean, you can still do, you know, very rich interactions with Astro sites. It's just that like... Because it's not the hot path, which, you know, I think is the right thing. It's just one more thing to do. And so if that's all you're doing, it's like, you know, maybe not the best choice. Like I would say maybe, you know, use Lit, create a bunch of Lit components, you know.
Yeah, that's I was going to say maybe Angular is cool again.
Angular is cool.
Oh, we're going to find out. We'll find out in January as K-Ball and ML host a few eagerly anticipated and requested Angular coverage coming to JS Party. There's my prediction.
Sorry, we suck at Angular coverage, guys. I just, so you know, I think it's just like not a lot of us are using it anymore. I was managing a team for a little while that was an Angular team, but I was a manager, so I was dealing with all the other problems and didn't get a chance to really dig into Angular too much. But I'm excited to do that this upcoming year.
Yep, January, February, we've got a couple on the books, and if those go well, I think now we have some connections into those teams, so we can get more.
Yeah, I have also just a really great community show planned with a couple of really nice folks from Poland as well. Like I would love to do that in like March, April. So, because the Angular community is amazing. They're like the best community. Like I feel like in the front end space, they're just the most lovey-dovey. I don't know. They're great. So
have you ever heard of Ember.js?
Oh yeah, I take that back. Ember's great too. I just know less people, so Ember's amazing too. But those are definitely the best communities by far.
Any other predictions for 24, Amel?
My prediction is that I want to clarify something. I don't want to like some of the smartest people I know in our industry are writing components, and like they write like way more complicated components than I could ever even write. There's nothing wrong with writing components. I would just maybe wanted to clarify that like I'm not being paid to create buttons and interactions on a screen anymore. Like I'm paid to do the other stuff. But so I just wanted to correct that because I feel like
Your point recently was you're not being paid to do those things yet.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm not being paid to do those things yet. Listen, do you understand the meaning of it's really hard to like quit fun employment? I'm having too much fun. I don't like if I could do this for another like year, I'd be straight, you know? But alas, I have to get a job. So got to help my husband pay the bills, you know. My predictions are we are going to start embracing simplicity. So I think we're kind of at the point of the pendulum swing where we are like, our problems have problems, you know. And so
that's a good episode title.
Yeah, our problems have problems. So it's like we're just going to start to realize that we have dug ourselves into way complicated mess, and CSS and JavaScript and, you know, web APIs are giving us some really great primitives that are going to potentially help us write more idiomatic code all around, including type annotations, which I'm super excited about. We're a few years away from that, unfortunately, hitting a browser, I think, but still, that's very exciting. And so I think we're going to start embracing simplicity, because I think we're going to realize that, like, less is more. And when you have more time, especially, it means you can do more things for your users. So, you know, that's what I'm hoping for. I think we're going to see a lot more projects embrace JS docs over TypeScript as one small step towards simplicity, I think, specifically around, like, builds architectures and stuff like that. I think we'll start to see a lot more apps shipping unbundled JavaScript, but I think minified unbundled JavaScript, you know? So a little bit better than what DHH recently shipped with once, you know, but very close to it.
Hundreds across the board, wasn't it?
Sure, but I think you have to understand there's a big difference between Lighthouse and simulated performance and versus, like, in the wild. It's very different numbers. And so I think that's why a lot of performance experts...
Don't they create those so that we can actually do our tests against our... Are we all striving for that, though?
It's that whole thing about once the metric becomes the goal, it gets gamed.
Yeah.
Right? So those metrics were useful when we weren't targeting them as much. And now that we target them, we game them in a way that isn't necessarily representative of real-world performance.
But you have information about once that shows its real-world performance?
Well, so funny. I have a friend who's like, I really wish I could... They just don't want to start a public beef war, right? Like with DHH. As I didn't start a beef war, but, like, I definitely disagreed with him publicly, and I dealt with all his reply guys for a few days, so that was fun. But basically, his whole thing was like, I want to just take his site and just run those files through a few build steps and show him how it's faster, you know, but, like, minifying and compressing those files is going to be faster than what he has. It just is. It's like, you can do benchmarks with any other website in the wild and see that. So hopefully, anyways, either way though, he's taking a step in the right direction. So I don't really care about the specifics. Like, I think in general, step towards simplicity. So that's my prediction.
How do we measure that?
I don't know, Jared, that's a you problem.
Any measurement I come up with, you'll game. So
Twitter sentiment is the scientific unit of measurement, okay? How many
Twitter sentiment.
Wait, aren't we gonna run we're gonna run a survey this year, right? So maybe
we're gonna ask people they value simplicity. Who says no to that? Nobody says no to that.
I don't know, but maybe we can come up with some sort of proxy metric that we don't expose to people, but, you know, you figure out how you want to measure it. Put it behind the survey, run a survey beginning of year and end of year, and there we have a way to start to...
Yeah. You guys, I got to tell you a story about this thing called a smoot. S-M-O-O-T. There's this bridge right next to MIT where they literally took some, like, fraternity guy and they just measured how many times across... Like, how many times can we lie this person down, you know, across the bridge? Like, how many... They basically came up with a unit of measurement, which was his height. And it was like, how many smoots does it take to get across the bridge? And right, so they came up with this unit. And anyway, so all I'm saying is that we have something called a smoot.
Where is this going?
That was made up unit. So we need something like that. That's like a Twitter sentiment type thing, you know?
Oh.
So how many scrolls does it take before you see someone, like, complaining or praising something?
That was already something. Wasn't it called clout?
Oh, clout.
Prediction. Clout will not be renovated in 2024. Okay, so assuming that we can measure sentiment towards simplicity, mm-hmm. it's going to increase in 2024.
I think so, okay. Because I think enough is enough. We are really peaking on complexity and making our lives so much harder than they have to be. And I think as a result, we're hurting our industry because people on the outside are just looking at us like solved problems in different flavors. And, you know, JavaScript just kind of gets a bad rep in enterprise as a result. So
could we, like, rank different open source frameworks or other things in terms of complexity and then, like, measure that or, like, do something? Like, there's a couple different angles I could see taking this. So one is, like, certain frameworks are more complex than others, and maybe we could just have a ranking and then see how many people are starting new projects based on those frameworks. We could do dependency counts. Number of dependencies is a rough correlation with complexity or simplicity. we could just do how many monoliths are getting started on GitHub versus non-monolithic applications. I don't know. I feel like this is something that we could kind of like put up some proxy metrics for.
Yeah, well, I can ask Twitter, you know, this let's to be meta, like, let's just say, hey, Twitter, if I wanted to measure this metric, what are anchor posts that we can use?
But and Twitter's whatever Twitter suggests, bankrupt.
Right. I mean,
you can't do that anymore.
This sounds like a huge waste of time.
Yeah, here's the problem. You'll never get past the part where you have to define what simplicity is. You're just never going to get past it. There's PhDs about this thing. So I think we just keep it simple. And just declare a mail wrong at the end of the year. I mean, that'll be the simplest, right?
You know what, whatever. Wouldn't be the first time I was wrong. So
I will say, based on Twitter sentiment, it does seem there is a swing back towards more monolithic approaches, all-in-one frameworks like Ruby on Rails and Elixir and or Phoenix and things like that.
HTMX.
So, and like the kind of commentary I've heard about it is like, oh, because we now, because the tech industry is shrinking at the moment, or if not shrinking, at least struggling a little bit more, there's a lot more emphasis again on productivity over pure play scalability or technical perfection or whatever, and arguing that some of those other approaches were a zero interest rate phenomenon. But I don't know. I mean, I think to Amel's point, like there is a sentiment shift that seems like it's going on, and one could make arguments for whether that's continuing to be true. But yeah, an objective measure seems beyond us.
Yeah. And I think the React server components, like it was a big catalyst, I think, in kind of making that higher level conversation, because I can tell you this simplicity thing has been happening. These are conversations that have been happening, like at least in my circles for a while, like years. You know, it's just, I think the React server components thing really just pushed it to like this other level, you know, where people were just like, whoa, 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 you know, and like, what problem are we actually trying to solve here, you know? And like, so in that sense, I think it's a good thing. But I think for me, like, it's just someone who cares about the health of the web. Like I just want us to build cool stuff for people and make, you know, we need to focus on the next generation of problems. Like, how are we going to get our sites translated in all these different languages, and how are we going to make performant and accessible experiences that are for, you know, emerging markets, and how are we going to do cooler things on mobile? You know, how are we going to just have give people no reason to use a native app? You know, how can we create web experiences that are just good enough? You know, so like there's just that we're just not there yet. And so, you know, and it's like, we have so many other things to be focused on. And like, we're just like circling around these same problems. And I'm like, let's move on already, you know?
Well, not to be a downer, but I've had enough trips around the sun now to know that when it comes to software development community, shiny always beats simple. And we will be interested in simple until the next shiny. And then we will all quickly abandon our principles and chase shiny until shiny stops shining. And some new shiny comes out.
But has generative AI stopped shiny yet? Or is it still shiny?
Good question. Find out next time. No, I don't know. ran out of stuff to say.
What's up, friends? I'm here with one of our good friends, Firas Abukadij. Firas is the founder and CEO of Socket. You can find them at socket.dev. Secure your supply chain, ship with confidence. But Firas, I have a question for you. What's the problem? What security concerns do developers face when consuming open source dependencies? What does Socket do to solve these problems?
So the problem that Socket solves is when a developer is choosing a package, there's so much potential information they could look at, right? I mean, at the end of the day, they're trying to get a job done, right? There's a feature they want to implement. They want to solve a problem. So they go and find a package that looks like it might be a promising solution. Maybe they check to see that it has an open source license, that it has good docs. Maybe they check the number of downloads or GitHub stars. But most developers don't really go beyond that. And if you think about what it means to use a good package, to find it, to use a good open source dependency, we care about a lot of other things too, right? We care about who is the maintainer. Is this thing well maintained? From a security perspective, we care about, does this thing have known vulnerabilities? Does it do weird things? Maybe it takes your environment variables and it sends them off to the network, meaning it's going to take your API keys, your tokens. Like, that would be bad. The unfortunate thing is that today, most developers who are choosing packages and going about their day, they're not looking for that type of stuff. It's not really reasonable to expect a developer to go and open up every single one of their dependencies and read every line of code, not to mention that the average NPM package has 79 additional dependencies that it brings in. So you're talking about just, you know, thousands and thousands of lines of code. And so we do that work for the developer. So we go out and we fully analyze every piece of their dependencies, you know, every one of those lines of code, and we look for strange things. We look for those risks that they're not going to have time to look for. So we'll find, you know, we detect all kinds of attacks and kinds of malware and vulnerabilities in those dependencies, and we bring them to the developer and help them when they're at that moment of choosing a package.
Okay, that's good. So what's the install process? What's the getting started?
Socket's super easy to get started with. So we're, you know, our whole team is made up of developers, and so it's super developer friendly. We got tired of using security tools that send a ton of alerts and were hard to configure and just kind of noisy. And so we built Socket to fix all those problems. So we have all the typical integrations you'd expect, a CLI, a GitHub app, an API, all that good stuff. But most of our users use Socket through the GitHub app, and it's a really fast install. A couple clicks, you get it going, and it monitors all your pull requests. And you can get an accurate and kind of in-depth analysis of all your dependencies. Really high signal to noise. You know, it doesn't just cover vulnerabilities. It's actually about the full picture of dependency risk and quality, right? So we help you make better decisions about dependencies that you're using directly in the pull request workflow, directly where you're spending your time as a developer. You know, whether you're managing a small project or a large application with thousands of dependencies, Socket has you covered, and it's pretty simple to use. It's really not a complicated tool.
Very cool. The next step is to go to socket.dev, install the GitHub app, or book a demo. Either works for us. Again, socket.dev. That's socket.dev.
Let's do resolutions, as we are getting near the end. Does anybody, we have a few predictions. We'll see what happens next year, of course, all in good fun. Resolutions, how about? I tend to just keep mine private so I can fail to myself, but some of y'all like to put them out there to the public so that we can help you stay accountable. Does anybody want to be resolved in this new year to maybe change something about their lives or have a goal for your career or for your not, for your fun employment, anything before we get into the big announcement?
So I'm working on a project and I've already published it. But I'm working on a doc site and a major rewrite and all that stuff. And I want to
really,
I want to get it out there and try to get it in more people's hands. And
awesome. Yeah.
So
tell us about it. I didn't know you're working on something new.
Oh, it's like a thing that like it lints your package. So if you're going to publish to registry, it lints that the tarball, the contents of the tarball and how the tarball, like you install from that tarball and how does it work and is it broken? And these are typically things that tests don't catch. The idea is you run this, it will do stuff like, you know, it packs your project, installs it into a tempter, and then runs a bunch of checks against it to make sure that consumers can actually use your package. And so that's the idea.
Nice.
That's very cool.
That's very cool.
Is it going to be called Shiny?
No. It's called Midnight Smoker.
Is it really called Midnight Smoker?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's okay. Kind of awesome.
Wait, so what's the backstory behind that? That sounds like the name of a blues album more so than a JavaScript
yeah.
No, it's like smoke tests, right?
Smoke tests, but also the Joker, right?
Right, right. And so one of its features is basically you can run arbitrary scripts against the package as it would be installed. And so that would, you know, be a smoke test. Okay, can I require this thing? Like, can I run the CLI? And you can do stuff like that. But there's also like built-in checks that if you don't want to write a custom script. And so that's kind of where the name came from, smoke test.
So that sounds as if it's from the perspective of the package publisher, but I, as you were describing it, I found myself wondering if there's a security version of this that a package installer could run this against a package they're going to install in a sandbox and see, like, does this make weird network requests or something else?
No, I mean, I think I'm probably going to just stay away from, there's other tools that can do things like that a lot better, I think. Like, I'm trying to be careful not to do things like, you know, I don't want to necessarily be a tool that checks and makes sure all the dependencies are there or they're all used or something. Because there are other tools that do that. And I don't want to step on ESLint's toes either. I don't want to do things like ESLint does. And so I'm trying
to... You mean you don't want to solve a solved problem?
Right. I'm trying to limit the scope. And I think like security checks are better. I mean, the other thing I work on, which is LavaMote, would maybe help more with that sort of thing.
We got to do a show on LavaMote next year.
Yeah, we do.
That's super cool. Yeah.
Anybody else? I think it's awesome, Chris. I think it sounds like a very achievable goal since you're almost finished. Of course, you know, 80-20 rule and documentation. So best of luck to you still. Anybody else want to go on the line, put themselves on the line? I don't know. Stay on the line with their resolutions.
I just want to say, for me, like I got to stay moving, like as in I have to stay unconstipated, I think, with my creativity. You know,
well, that paints a picture.
Yeah, whatever. You know, everybody uses the bathroom, including the former Queen of England, you know, and Beyonce.
Unless you're constipated, then you don't use it.
Yes. Anyways.
But that's how you think about your creativity? Just got to flush the system?
Yeah, I just got to keep it flowing and
keep
moving.
It moving.
Like that's, you know, keep it regular. That's I think that's the moving. Yeah, the yeah. No.
Metaphors, you
I
know.
Have a birthing, like I don't know, like I'm going to birth a lot of creativity.
You got world. Birthing on the mind.
Yeah, in 2024. No, I have some really fun projects coming up. I'm actually stepping into Node as a formal kind of contributor, and I'm going to be leading up a very exciting project that I'm like, oh, should I? I want to have a few more conversations with people before I publicly announce it. But yes, like this is not my announcement, no. But I'm saying I'm excited about that. I'm going to be doing some cool stuff with Node, and I'm going to be writing. You know, I'm going to not let perfect get in the way of good, right? Like, yeah, I got to write. So I think for me, I'm excited to like have a lot of creative energy. Kind of, I think, released into the world a bit more this year. So I think.
Got it.
Yeah.
More creativity, more flow.
More flow.
More birthing.
Mm-hmm. Birthing, yeah.
Flushing. Okay.
And flushing, yes.
Nick, you wanted to be on more conferences in 23. I see that you're speaking at that conference in January. So how do you feel about that resolution? And are you resolved to continue that flow? Or how do you feel about that? And maybe you have new ideas for this year?
Yeah, I am pretty excited about that. Kicking it off right away with that conference at the end of January, which will be a lot of fun. And I haven't submitted to any other ones, but I have ideas for talks that I think are really good. And they're things I'm really passionate about. I'm really getting into code modding and AST, like traversal and manipulation. And I think that there's a lot of really cool stuff to do with that. And I'm kind of working on a project around that right now. That I hope to continue on in the new year. But yeah, I think that there's a lot of changes coming up and I'm pretty excited about it. I think there's a podcast that I listen to called Cortex where they talk about like a yearly theme, and I just verbatim stole the yearly theme from the host for me. And that is like the year of small improvements. So like I have this idea of I'm just going to make a tiny improvement at least once a week. So that's 52 improvements over the next year. And that's going to be like overall awesome. And that's things like I'm going to install, you know, like a proper light in my office, or, you know, just like small bug fixes, things that are annoying me, I'm going to fix and not let them just be annoying.
Like your internet provider?
Like my internet provider.
Too soon?
I hope not.
Yeah. I love that idea.
And I'm going to wear sunglasses.
K-Ball, would you like to go on the line?
Sure. I have made and failed at physical resolutions the last 2 years we've done this, so I am not doing anything in that domain. So last year, was the first half of the year I was purely running my own business, and in some ways, because it takes a long time to ramp up business, I was undercommitted for much of the year. And then I ended up getting a job, which has been awesome and challenging, and I'm still running my own business. So I went from undercommitted to overcommitted. So my resolution for this year is to get to a place where I feel like I'm moderately balanced. I'm not so overcommitted that I feel like I'm pulled a million different ways, which was trending there towards the year as I got more onboarded with the job and it was less overwhelming, but also not so undercommitted that I'm looking for something new, like a new job. So I think that's the big goal. The other thing is to keep working on my coaching skills. That's what the business was around. That's also the job that I got is director of engineering at a coaching company called Mento. And so there's a lot of kind of opportunities for me to think about and learn to be a better coach. And I want to keep doing that. That is something that I enjoy tremendously. And I think is also something where I've been able to help people a lot. And it's super fun. So I will keep working on that.
Love it. Love it. Well, I'll finish up quickly and we'll go to the big announcement and call it a show. They say the best way to predict the future is to invent it. So I will combine predictions with resolutions and share a little bit. I think we are resolved here at JS Party to add some new voices to the pod this year. And so there you have both a prediction and a resolution. We're also resolved to bring back an old podcast here at Changelog to revitalize and bring back an old show that we used to produce and produce it once again. And I'm also resolved to take Changelog Plus to the next level in 24. So those are three things that I think are achievable, two of which are already in motion and happening. So easy to predict things that are 80% done, but we'll see if the last 20% gets finished in time for it to be successful. Definitely going to add some new voices around here. So stay tuned for that. Hopefully they'll be somewhat familiar yet new as regulars. Something we've been working on behind the scenes for the last couple of months. So that's exciting. Okay, Amel, big announcement. So much has been building up to this moment. K-Ball, Bone Skull, set her up. That means K-Ball does something and Chris just sits there.
Thank you. Yeah, I didn't want to have to prompt K-Ball. So yeah, I want my...
Go ahead, K-Ball. Announce the announcement.
Announcements, announcements, announcements.
Okay. There it was. There you go, Mel.
Chris is shaking his head like nothing's going to happen. So he's like, nope, 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 not
like
doing
that,
it.
No, like that shouldn't have happened.
Yeah. Wait, I can do the nose kazoo again if you want.
Okay, do it. Sounds good.
Let's do please. The nose it sounds like a horn.
So my announcement is that I pinged these dudes that I work with on JS Party a few weeks ago to say, hey, we'd love to do a survey this year. This year being next year. And like, how do you all feel about it? And like, they were all like, yeah, that sounds good. Okay, cool. So next steps are for me to create a repo. I want to kind of work on this in the open. But essentially what I'd like to do is create a JS Party listener survey, an annual listener survey. And so it would be great to work with some of you on like the questions and like what you all think are useful. We'll kind of seed some initial things there, but obviously, you know, we can discuss it. And so what I'd like to do is everything will be done in the open. You know, the survey questions, I think we'll probably use the state of JavaScript has this platform, the survey platform that they use. So I think we can actually technically host it there. But anyways, so would love to kind of like hear more from you all a bit more directly on like what you want more of, less of, etc. And just have a way to kind of touch base annually. And so I'd like to give us like, because everyone has 17 million other things that they're working on, you know, I'd like to give us at least like 6 to 8 months to kind of actually work on this starting in mid-January. And then I'd love to like launch the survey like in the last 3 months of this year. So yes, I think that's kind of what I'm thinking. So again, we'll put a link in the show notes for the repo where we'll be having these discussions and working in the open. If you're interested in contributing or chipping in or watching along, like please, yeah, like we would love your help and we welcome you. So, and I think one thing we'll have to decide is like, oh, does it make sense to translate the survey into a different language? Maybe not because the show is in English, but I don't
TypeScript.
Know. You all decide. Like, so.
There you go. There you have it. The link will be in your show notes. You can get involved, help shape this, help it make it better than we could surely make it on our own. That would be awesome. And we would love to hear from y'all about how to make that great for everybody. Okay, this has been our New Year's party. Happy 24 to all you all out there listening. Any final words from the panel before I hit that outro song? Except for Nick. Anybody but Nick.
Oh, come on. I had a good one.
Go ahead, Nick.
Did you know that if you long press the share button on Threads, you get the share sheet?
What?
That's it.
For Nick Nisi, Amel, Chris, K-Ball, I'm Jared. This is JS Party. Happy 24, y'all. Let's make it an awesome one. We'll see ya next week. That is that. Our first episode of 2024. Did you dig it? And do you have any predictions and or resolutions you'd like to share? Let us know in the comments. There's a link in your show notes. We love hearing from you. And of course, you can always come hang out in the JS Party channel of our totally free, totally rad community Slack. Sign up today at jsparty.fm/community. Thanks once again to our partners at fly.io, to Breakmaster Cylinder for these dope beats, and to you for listening. Next up on the pod, so much good stuff. Front End Feud returns, Guillermo Rauch goes one-on-one with Amel, the Angular team stops by, and more. Stay tuned right here so we can party together again next week.
Well, no. I have an announcement.
Okay. Oh, you want to announcements. Announcements. This is part of our...
So you let me know if you want the announcement to be now or later.
Let's save it for later. You always save the announcement for the end.
Announcements.
Yeah, Cable, you're always the best at announcing announcements. I have to say, like, you're, like, always, like... Like, that was, like, your job in a past life.
I don't know. Chris has, like, literal kazoo over there. He could probably do a better do-do-do than
Cable. Yeah, because... Okay, you know what? Can we do a song between you, Cable and Chris? Can you do announcements? And I'll be maestro and he kazoos.
Can your kazoo do an announcing sound?
No.
I saw that coming a mile away and I still wanted it to, so I allowed it.
Does he really mean it, or was that just like...
Oh, he means it.
Oh no. All right, it's both. We'll just have to imagine it, K-Ball. Okay, do you want to do the announcement?
Nope, let's save it for the end. Always save the best for the end.
Okay, we'll do that.